Sometimes you wonder why does it feels like everything I do is wrong? Why did this happen to me? What should I do? Everything always goes wrong. People are unhappy with the things they want and not happy with the things they try to avoid. I feel sorry for us because we can't even tell the difference between good and bad. No one will hold this against us though, because we are all in the same situation. In fact, we will be urged to stay ignorant at every turn. Few people are wise, though they know that nothing is good beyond what is necessary, and that nothing that fortune controls is to be feared. They stand out. Seneca says that you will not be limited or in need if you choose to follow these wise people and separate yourself from the crowd. To become wise yourself, you will be free, safe, and ignored. Nothing you try will fail, and nothing will stop you from doing what you want. Everything will go the way you want it to. Nothing bad will happen to you. Only what you expect and hope for will happen. No misfortune will occur. That's how the Stoic sage is described. They are like the awakened figures of Jesus Christ or the Buddha in their own religions. Using virtue perfectly and consistently is what it means to live a good life. Even though this might be a bit too far away to reach, it is a good goal to work toward. Even though no one can reach perfection, it seems likely that some of us could get most of the way there, and that most of us could make real progress in the right direction. Seneca the Younger, whose full name was Lucius Annius Seneca, was a Roman politician and author who wrote a lot of Stoic works. Both his life and death were very interesting, and his many works have helped us learn a lot about Stoicism. Letters from a Stoic, On Anger, On Benefits, On the Shortness of Life, and Of a Happy Life are just a few of the works that give a lot of useful information and psychological thoughts. As we learn more about the way to knowledge, we will use Seneca's lessons to help us find our way. Part 1. What exactly does Stoicism entail? A philosophy of life encompasses any system of thought that helps us prioritize our values and directs us toward what is most important. It serves as a guiding framework that shapes our decisions and actions, influencing the way we navigate through the complexities of existence. Without such a philosophy, one might succumb to the allure of selfish pursuits, chasing fleeting pleasures while avoiding discomfort, ultimately leading to a life tainted with regret. According to Seneca, our propensity for error often stems from our tendency to focus on isolated fragments of life rather than considering the broader perspective. He likens life to archery, where the archer must have a clear target in mind and skillfully use their bow to hit it. Similarly, our plans and endeavors are bound to falter if they lack a clear objective. Without a defined destination, any direction we take is rendered meaningless, akin to a ship adrift without a designated port. Enter Stoicism, a philosophy of life premised on the belief that one can attain the highest level of fulfillment by employing reason to guide virtuous living. It offers a practical approach to existence, advocating for a deliberate and mindful engagement with the world. Stoicism is not merely an abstract concept to be passively absorbed. Rather, it is a dynamic way of life, demanding active participation and continuous application. While Stoicism can be studied academically, its true essence lies in its integration into everyday living. To be a Stoic is to internalize its principles and embody them in all facets of life. It requires a vigilant awareness of one's thoughts and surroundings, a constant striving to align actions with Stoic values, and an unwavering commitment to the philosophy's precepts. Embracing Stoicism entails adhering to its principles consistently across diverse contexts, persistently endeavoring to live in accordance with its teachings rather than merely contemplating them. It necessitates a conscious effort to cultivate virtues such as wisdom, courage, temperance and justice in every aspect of life, from personal relationships to professional endeavors. Living as a Stoic involves a deliberate choice to confront challenges with resilience and equanimity, to approach adversity with a rational and calm demeanor, and to find solace in the inherent dignity of virtuous living. It requires an ongoing practice of self-reflection and self-improvement, a dedication to honing one's character and fostering inner tranquility amidst the ebb and flow of life's circumstances. In essence, Stoicism advocates for a holistic approach to living, a way of life that prioritizes virtue, cultivates inner peace, and fosters personal growth. It is a philosophy that transcends mere intellectual understanding, calling upon individuals to embody its principles in thought, word, and deed. Thus, to embark on the path of Stoicism is to embark on a journey of self-discovery and self-mastery, a journey that requires diligence, perseverance, and a steadfast commitment to living a life of purpose and fulfillment. It is a journey that begins not with passive contemplation, but with active engagement, not with lofty ideals, but with practical application. As we bid farewell to our exploration of Stoicism, let us carry forward the lessons learned and strive to create lives imbued with peace, resilience, and meaning. Let us remember that the best time to embrace Stoicism was yesterday, but the next best time is now. May our paths be illuminated by the guiding light of Stoic wisdom as we continue our journey toward a life well lived. What does virtue mean? The Stoics used their minds to figure out the best way to live, and they came up with the four cardinal virtues: courage, knowledge, justice, and moderation. Even though they don't ignore other virtues, it is their unique way of looking at these that makes up the core of Stoicism. There will be more on each of these in one of the parts that follow, but for now, here are the short versions. Being wise means dealing with only the things you can control. Being fair means treating everyone like family. Temperance means limiting your wants to what you already have. Being brave means getting over your fears. Having these core virtues leads to what Seneca called tranquility of mind, which is a deep peace and mental stability. What does peace of mind mean? A mental state known as tranquility of mind, also known as peace of mind, is defined by the absence of bad feelings. It's not about not having any feelings, being disconnected or not caring. It's about feeling safe, loved, thankful, and free without worry, regret, anger, or hate. The amazing idea that we can live the best lives possible by acting in the most virtuous way possible is the great finding of Stoicism. This understanding isn't just an intellectual idea, it's a fact of life that if we live by virtue and reason, our lives will be happy and peaceful no matter what luck has in store for us. Stoic mindfulness. It's not accurate to call Stoicism Western Buddhism, but it does have more in common with that philosophy than with the Judeo-Christian faiths that came after it. The practice of mindfulness, which involves being aware of one's thoughts in the present moment and being able to focus one's attention, is at the heart of Stoicism. We must act wisely and virtuously right now, because it is the only thing that truly exists. Ignoring the present is like giving up on life itself, because there is no promise of what will happen after this time. Right now, we need to be present and virtuous. Objective judgment now, at this very moment. Unselfish action now, at this very moment. Willing acceptance now, at this very moment, of all external events. That is all you need. Before we can work on the virtues, we need to do some exercises to improve our ability to focus on the present. Stoic practice meditation. There isn't a practice in Stoicism that is exactly the same as meditation, but Seneca probably would have taken it up fully if there was one. He wrote many carefully thought-out pieces on it. ability to change and endurance are both enemies of tranquility. The mind must be turned away from outside things and toward itself. Most of all, it should believe in itself, be happy with itself, respect its own things, stay away from other people's things as much as possible, and focus on its own things. Let it not feel losses, let it see even bad things in a good way. Meditation is such a useful and easy to do tool that it should be included in any attempt to show a true version of Stoicism. Even if you only do it for 10 minutes a day, simple breath meditation can be very helpful. You can use a meditation app or just sit quietly and focus on your breath. If you find that your mind wanders, slowly bring it back to your breath. A lot of people are confused about what meditation is and how it works. Not only is it not relaxing, but it's also not hard. Having a clear mind doesn't help with meditation. It's when you become aware of being sidetracked that it helps. It's hard to keep your mind on the breath the whole time, so the best meditation is the kind where you quickly catch yourself thinking about something else. You improve your mindfulness and stoicism each time you pay attention and reflect. In the part two, we will go into more depth about what the Stoics meant by wisdom and how to use it. Wisdom, the two sides of control. The difference between control and lack of control is the most important part of knowledge and the main idea of Stoicism in general. This idea tells us the difference between things we can control and things we can't. Stoic philosophy holds that, in order to live wisely, we must learn to be indifferent to things outside of our control and put all of our energy into things we can actually control. Epicurus, a famous Stoic leader, said that we have direct control over our thoughts, feelings, wants, and dislikes. Contrarily, we should keep a Stoic apathy toward external situations like unforeseen events, misfortune, health problems, and accidents. In A Guide to the Good Life, Professor William Irvine slightly improves the idea so that it fits with what we know now about how minds work. He talks about what he calls the trichotomy of control. Irvine says that this system divides things into three clear levels of control: full control, partial control, and no control at all. It helps me to break it down a bit more like this. Full control over our thoughts, goals, and beliefs. All of these things live in my mind, so I have full control over them. Actions, wants, and fears that you have a lot of control over. My acts are under my control as long as I'm not feeling too much passion. Even though my fears and desires are strong, I can judge them and change my mind about them. Not much control. Impulses. These happen on the spot and are hard to control, but they can be tamed with practice and planning ahead. No control. What you like and don't like. These deeply held tastes are harder to change. Sometimes it is possible, but only after a lot of hard work over a long period of time. The Serenity Prayer is another well-known form of this idea. It is usually said like this: God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. The Stoics believed that being wise meant being able to tell the difference. The rest of the philosophy tells you how to change the things you can and accept the things you can't. What's good and bad? Once we have a new idea of what we can control and what is good and bad, the next step is to use this knowledge to grow wise. In order to protect our happiness from the whims of fortune, this entails having internal goals and developing indifference to things we cannot control. We need to make sure that our wants are in line with what we can control. Stoicism, on the other hand, calls for a different kind of devotion. A deep respect for virtue. You, from the heart, realizing what is right or trying to act in a way that is right is not enough. Seneca stresses how important it is to love virtue with all your heart, not just understand it. When you truly believe in virtue, it changes from something that could be a pain to to something that brings you real joy. Stoics are happy to take on tasks that other people would rather not, because it gives them a chance to show their virtue. Stoics take pride in standing up for morality and truth, even if it costs them a lot. This is because they are dedicated to following virtue. They are able to live happy, fulfilling lives no matter what is going on around them, because they revere these things. You must truly believe this and love virtue with all your heart, because liking it is not enough. Then anything that has been touched by virtue will bring you blessing and wealth, no matter how other people see it. Even if you are being tortured, you are calmer in your mind than the person who is torturing you. Illness, if only you wouldn't curse fortune and give in to the sickness. In short, everything that other people see as bad will become doable and turn out for the best if you can rise above it. Look into philosophy first. I'll let Seneca explain this part more than I will. Give your whole life to philosophy. This is all from letter 72 of Letters from a Stoic, which is called On Business as the Enemy of Philosophy. She doesn't deserve you, but you deserve her. Give each author a warm hug and say goodbye to everything else with honesty and courage. Don't just study philosophy when you have free time. If you were sick, you wouldn't worry about your personal issues and would forget to do your work. You wouldn't trust any client enough to take charge of his case while your own pain was getting a little better. You would do everything you could to get better as soon as possible. So why don't you do the same thing now? Get rid of everything that is stopping you and spend all of your time on getting a sound mind. No one can do that if they are busy with other things. You have to take care of yourself first if you want to do good things for other people. Because of this pledge, you must always be looking for reason. It takes being very self-aware and knowing why you do everything you do to follow this road. You have to give up comfort and wealth, get over your vices, and always be aware of your own and your loved ones' deaths, to live each moment in a way that would make you proud if it were your last. You have to remember that not even the next hour is certain. Philosophy shouldn't be something you do by yourself. It should permeate every part of life and make sure that everything is done with excellence and virtue. Philosophical thinking can help us deal with things like death and pain, and it should help us deal with work, shopping, food, and everything else. This is what Seneca means when he tells us to start with philosophy. Think about and deal with everything else in life through the lens of Stoicism. Writing and reflecting are important parts of the Stoic way of life. In fact, reflection writing is the only modern guide that talks about this practice. Seneca's quote, "When the light has been turned off and my wife has fallen silent, aware of this habit that is now mine, I examine my whole day and go back over what I've done and said, hiding nothing from myself and passing nothing by," is often used to accompany this practice. While this is good advice, it does not fully capture the essence of how Stoicism works. Also, you'll notice that Seneca isn't writing in a diary. He's thinking about things inside himself. The fact that he is smart and hasn't lost his attention to technology makes this possible. People like me, who have modern brains that aren't very smart, will do much better writing things down. So, what does this process of thinking do for us? I believe this quote better shows what I mean. I shall keep watching myself constantly, and a most useful habit shall review each day. For this is what makes us wicked, that no one of us looks back over his own life. Our thoughts are devoted only to what we are about to do, and yet our plans for the future always depend on the past. You are more likely to pay attention to your actions and experiences when you know you will be writing about them in a book, which pushes you to choose virtue over natural, unthinking behavior. At first, you may find that your diary writings are too general, or that it's hard to remember what happened that day. But if you keep at it, your ability to remember things and be present in daily life will get better, which will show that you are making progress in this practice. It's best to write in your diary every night around the same time. not how you write, type, or talk in your journal, is less important than the act of writing. You only need 10 to 15 minutes of work every night to keep you on track during the day. When it comes to tasks, we want to think about what we want to learn to pay attention to. That's why I ask, what went well today and what didn't? What else could you have done? What bad habit did you break today? What sin have you looked at? How are you better than them? Write down the good things that have happened to you and why you are thankful for them. Plan how you'll be able to return them later. What was the smartest thing you thought of today? What does Seneca do every day for himself? Get yourself something that will protect you from misfortunes like poverty, death, and more. And once you've gone over a lot of ideas, pick one to really think about that day. It's how I do things. From all the things I've read, I choose one to share with you. Watch how you act and make sure you're always getting better. Never forget to say thank you or pay back people who have helped you every day. Get rid of one flaw and come up with one great idea to protect yourself from what luck throws at you. All of these things have effects that get bigger over time, like interest that builds on itself. Suppose you did this every day for 1 month, 1 year, 5 years, or even your whole life. What would you be like? Part 3 is about justice. Most of what the Stoics say about justice is similar to what most people say, but the Stoics put more weight on some things. When we apply the two types of control to the idea of justice, Stoicism tells us something different about how we should act. The Stoics also think that people are naturally social and were born to live together and work together. This gives their view of justice a greater understanding of how we are all linked. This point of view leads to a more community-focused approach to justice, recognizing that we are all responsible for each other and rely on each other. Do not do what is wrong. If it's not true, don't say it. Marcus Aurelius was the Roman emperor and a very calm person. He was one of the 5 good emperors, which is a pretty strong support of the philosophy. Meditations, a collection of his personal works, contains deep observations. One famous quote from these works is, "If it be not fitting, do it not." The author wrote them just for himself to think about. "If it is not true, speak it not," which is often translated online as, "If it is not right, do not do it. If it is not true, do not say it." This perfectly captures the core Stoic principle. Always do what is right and speak the truth, no matter what. Stoicism teaches that the moral honesty of our actions and words is the most important thing, and that any bad things that happen because we stick to virtue are better than losing that honesty. Stoics have shown their devotion to this concept throughout history by often facing exile, torture, or even death. Seneca himself was put to death by Emperor Nero and chose to end his own life rather than give up his honor and be tortured. The idea that tranquility of mind, which is the greatest good in Stoicism, is gained through virtue and lost through its compromise is the reason for such strict devotion to virtue. Doing good things and telling the truth are the only ways to have a clear mind, which is necessary for inner peace. Maintaining virtue is even more important when things are bad and bad things could happen. One big moral mistake can weigh on someone's mind for a lifetime. Also, Stoicism gives a clear view on group action problems, which can be hard to understand for people who don't have a philosophy of life. This includes issues like the tragedy of the commons or the subtle harm that comes from seeing other people do small immoral things. According to Stoicism, the right thing to do is based on one's morality, not on what other people do or on a cost-benefit evaluation. A Stoic focuses on acting with virtue and simply does what is right, while others may argue about how their individual actions affect the bigger picture. Interconnectivity. There is no such thing as good or bad luck for an individual. We all live together, and no one can be happy who only thinks about himself and turns everything into a question of his own comfort. If you want to live for yourself, you have to live for your friend. The Stoics thought that all people are connected, and that we are all born to share our lives with others and help each other. If you treat someone like a stranger, you're not properly connected with them. People who are strangers are more like distant cousins, because we share human traits, especially the ability to reason. What good things does a Stoic do for the world? A common problem that people who are not Stoics bring up about the philosophy is the idea of inaction. Sure, virtue and tranquility of thought sound great, but not if it means giving up on the world and what's going on in it. People get this wrong because when people use the word Stoicism in everyday speech, they only mean the part about controlling your feelings. When people think of bravery and justice, they should remember Cato the Younger, who was the last person to stand up for the Roman Republic against Julius Caesar, or George Washington during the American Revolution. But luckily, none of us will have to go that far. How to be a Stoic? Can I be like that too? In the last drill, we looked at ways to improve your attention and become more aware of your thoughts as they happen. This skill is very important for our next activity, which will help you get along better with other people. The main goal of this practice is to train yourself to recognize right away when you start to judge someone. Your goal should be to change your thinking to something more virtuous as soon as you realize you are doing it, and to remind yourself that you are both human beings. If you notice someone else being sick, ask yourself, can I be like that too? If the answer is yes, which it probably is, it's easy to stop judging them and instead feel sorry for them. My cousin and I struggle to keep our tempers under control. I'm glad mine isn't attacking me right now. If you said no, it will be easier to stop judging and start feeling sorry for them. You will also be thankful for whatever it is that has kept you from making this character flaw. Being consistent with this practice takes work, but it is a strong way to become a better, happier person. It's also a good way to worship virtue in a meaningful way. When you stop seeing other people as mostly annoying and start seeing them as family who can be difficult at times, you will know you're getting closer to a state of tranquility. Part 4 is about being moderate. When it comes to moderation, the Stoics stress discipline and self-control more than anyone else. It is very important that you turn away from both what people want and what they are afraid of. We chase after things like money and fame that we think are good, but they aren't. They go from good to bad and often cost us more than they gain. We need to realize this and stop looking for them. What we fear, like poverty, a bad image, being alone, illness and death, is not evil. It's just something that happens to everyone and is out of our control, so it can't hurt us unless we do something bad to ourselves because of it. We need to understand this and stop being afraid of them. Any man can hate everything, but no man can own everything. The fastest way to get rich is to hate being rich. This rule is true for more than just money. It also works for fame and relationships. Seneca is basically telling us to look down on fortune's part in these facets of life, which may seem like a strong word. Do you want to know what the right amount of wealth is? It's first important to have what you need, and then what you have is enough. Be moderate with things you need every day, like food, drink, clothes, and a place to live. Even though these are basic wants, they should be met in a way that feels simple and enough. Going beyond what is needed can make you want more, which can set off a chain reaction of other bad habits. Having more than you need is not a good thing. A real good thing is having a mind that wants only what you need. Hold fast to this good and healthy rule of life. Only give in to your body as much as it needs for health. People should be stricter with their bodies so that they don't disobey their minds. You should only eat to satisfy your hunger, drink to quench your thirst, dress to keep out the cold, and live somewhere to avoid being uncomfortable. it doesn't really matter if the house is made of grass or different colored foreign marble. Know this, a man is just as safe under a thatch roof as under a gold roof. Hate everything that pointless work turns into a decoration or a beautiful thing, and think about how the soul is the only thing that deserves to be adored. Though something may seem great to the mind, it may not be so to the soul. Virtue is not unlearned, but although virtues, when accepted, cannot leave and are easy to guard, yet the first steps in the approach to them are toilsome. It is characteristic of a weak and sick mind to fear that which is unknown. The mind must therefore be made to make a beginning. From then on, the medicine is not bitter, for just as soon as it is healing us, it begins to give pleasure. One enjoys other cures only after health is returned, but a draught of philosophy is at the same moment healthy and pleasant. We need an organized method to make this beginning and learn to hate our vices. The process looks something like the following and can be a writing or a thought exercise. Be as comprehensive as possible in your analysis. Choose a specific vice to concentrate on. Explain the reasons behind your attraction to this vice. Reflect on both the actual and perceived negative consequences caused by this vice. Consider the detrimental actions you engage in to perpetuate this vice. Contemplate the opportunities and advancements that this vice has prevented you from attaining. Imagine the improvements that would manifest in your life by embodying virtue instead of succumbing to this vice. For example, think about a strong addiction to drinking. It might make you feel better temporarily or boost your social confidence, but it will hurt your health and take away your freedom. It can become a crutch that makes it harder to deal with life's difficulties, reducing resilience. This habit not only wastes your money and time, but it could also make you dishonest with people you care about. Instead, think about getting your strength from within and the freedom that comes with it. If people live by virtue, their lives would be much better. Often we only recognize our flaws on a surface level, not fully understanding where they come from or how they affect us. Deep thought is an important part of changing how you act. This process keeps our vices and the things that make us act on them in the forefront of our thoughts. This makes us more aware of them and better able to fight them in the present. Part 5 is about having courage. Stoic courage embodies the ability to confront adversity with wisdom and resilience. It entails employing philosophical principles during challenging circumstances, recognizing that relinquishing virtue and inner peace is a greater loss than any potential consequences for adhering to moral integrity and truthfulness. Often, we allow fear to paralyze us, akin to children trembling at the thought of monsters lurking beneath their beds. However, if we succumb to apprehension regarding life's inevitable pains and sufferings, we fail to grasp that countless individuals throughout history, as well as many in the present moment, have faced similar trials. While certain outcomes may not align with our desires, it is imperative to acknowledge that they lie beyond our realm of control and are not worth sacrificing our tranquility for. Indeed, such adversities present invaluable opportunities to exemplify virtue. Stoic courage necessitates confronting life's challenges with fortitude and equanimity. It empowers individuals to uphold their principles and endure adversity with grace, understanding that true strength lies in maintaining inner peace and moral rectitude, regardless of external circumstances. Stoic practice, negative visualization. Thinking carefully about potential misfortunes is a good way to train your courage today, so it is ready at hand when you need it in the future. This is likely the most challenging practice, so be prepared to encounter some resistance. Begin with less severe and improbable misfortunes, gradually progressing to more daunting scenarios that are likely to occur. The aim is to contemplate these situations thoughtfully rather than worry about them. developing the ability to think about the events without having an immediate emotional reaction is a key part of this practice and will require patience. Our ultimate objective is to achieve a state of complete preparedness, enabling us to mentally navigate through the gravest of life's potential hardships. This includes confronting the possibility of our own premature death, the loss of loved ones, severe illnesses, accidents resulting in disabilities, victimization through violence, financial collapse, wrongful accusations, and imprisonment. Fortune is a true monster, and if we want to stand firm against it, we must prepare for it to assail our every weak point. We should therefore reflect upon all contingencies and should fortify our minds against the evils which may possibly come. Exile, the torture of disease, wars, shipwreck, we must think on these. Chance may tear you from your country or your country from you, or may banish you to the desert. This very place where throngs are stifling may become a desert. Let us place before our eyes in its entirety the nature of man's lot, and if we would not be overwhelmed or even dazed by those unwanted evils, as if they were novel, let us summon to our minds beforehand not as great an evil, as oftentimes happens, but the very greatest evil that possibly can happen. We must reflect upon fortune fully and completely. While most of us will not be able to go that far in our preparation, it is crucial that this practice not be skipped altogether, even by those who find it especially challenging. If someone wants to get their mind healthy, they need to do at least some negative visualization of the bad things that are going to happen to them and any personal monsters that scare them. This is because the path to a calm mind is blocked while these things are still in control of us. Negative visualization can be done through journaling or meditation, but because the mind naturally doesn't like to think about bad things, it's best to do it alone. Figure out what you're afraid of to start. Figure out what fears or situations make you anxious or upset. What are these fears, and why do they have so much power over you? Imagine what will happen. Really feel what the scary event or situation is like as it happens. Think about the short-term and long-term effects which will happen. Embrace your inherent ability to respond with virtue and integrity, aligning your actions with your philosophy of control. Part 6. The right way to give. We must have generous intentions followed up by generous acts and bestow them on worthy people so that we encourage the return of those benefits and the building of a chain of connection and love between the receiver and ourselves. We must learn to give at the right time and in the right way, and then to act as if we forgot our debt. We must also learn to receive and repay in the right way, how to show gratitude, and how to keep our benefits in the forefront of our minds. We are to speak of benefits and to define a matter which is the chief bond of human society. We are to lay down a rule of life such that neither careless open-handedness may commend itself to us under the guise of goodness of heart, and yet that our circumspection, while it moderates, may not quench our generosity, a quality in which we ought neither to exceed nor to fall short. Men must be taught to be willing to give, willing to receive, willing to return, and to place before themselves the high aim not merely of equaling, but even of surpassing those to whom they are indebted, both in good offices and in good feeling, because the man whose duty it is to repay can never do so unless he outdoes his benefactor. The one class must be taught to look for no return, the other to feel deeper gratitude. So, what is a benefit? A benefit is the art of being kind in a way that both gives and receives pleasure, and it happens naturally and without thought. What is important is not the thing that is done or given, but the spirit in which it is done or given. Because a benefit doesn't exist in the thing that is done or given, but in the mind of the person who does or gives it. You can see how big the difference is. One man says that he owes the money which he has received, another that he owes a consulship, a priesthood, a province, and so on. These, however, are but the outward signs of kindnesses, not the kindnesses themselves. A benefit is not to be felt and handled. It is a thing which exists only in the mind. There is a great difference between the subject matter of a benefit and the benefit itself. Wherefore, neither gold nor silver nor any of those things which are most highly esteemed are benefits, but the benefit lies in the goodwill of him who gives them. The ignorant take notice only of that which comes before their eyes, and which can be owned and passed from hand to hand, while they disregard that which gives these things their value. The things which we hold in our hands, which we see with our eyes, and which avarice hugs, are transitory. They may be taken from us by ill luck or by violence. But a kindness lasts even after the loss of that by means of which it was bestowed, for it is a good deed which no violence can undo. For instance, suppose that I ransomed a friend from pirates, but another pirate has caught him and thrown him into prison. The pirate has not robbed him of my benefit, but has only robbed him of the enjoyment of it. Bestowing benefits seems simple, but is rarely done properly, often dragging ourselves and the people we want to help through unnecessary hardship. We rarely give what we should, and often ruin our gifts with the way we give them or deal with them after they have been given. It is a cause for pity for the whole human race that being helpful is so difficult. Lucky for us, Seneca has a lot of advice for us on this topic. First off, how should we choose people to bestow benefits on? We should prefer people who are likely to be grateful for them over people who are likely to pay them back. We should value people by their hearts alone. In choosing a fit person, I shall not, as you expect, pay the least attention to whether I am likely to get any return from him, for I choose one who will be grateful, not one who will return my goodness. And it often happens that the man who makes no return is grateful, while he who returns a benefit is ungrateful. I value men by their hearts alone, and therefore I shall pass over a rich man if he be unworthy, and give to a good man, though he be poor, for he will be grateful, however destitute he may be, since whatever he may lose, his heart will still be left to him. There are three things we should give. First, what is necessary. Second, what is useful. And third, what is nice. The next thing we need to decide is what kinds of benefits we want to give and how we should do them. Let's start with what is necessary, then what is useful, and finally, what is nice. As long as it lasts, we need to start with what is important, because things that keep life going have a very different effect on the mind than things that make it look better or feel better. As we've already talked about why and how to give benefits, the next step is to look at the equally important skills of receiving and returning them. This is a very important part, because it completes the cycle of generosity and strengthens the bonds of union that give us safety and peace of mind. When we receive a benefit from a good person, we should be grateful, which repays their kindness toward us. If we also receive something material, we should return it if we can. But the main part of our debt is paid by remembering the benefit and our plan to repay it. As Seneca says, that benefit which consists of the action is repaid when we receive it graciously. That other which consists of something received kindliness has been returned, which paid off the debt of kindness. Now the actual debt needs to be paid back. Part 7. On the shortness of life. Many people have been told they will die and have seen others die, but they still act as if they are sure they will be the first to live forever. This is one of our common crazy beliefs. We do this because we are afraid of death, even though it is an outside event as natural as birth. We didn't fear birth because we were nothing before we were born. We make our lives long or short by how we use our time. A life of limited years spent wisely, possessing tranquility of mind, living in accordance with nature, is infinitely preferable to a long one wasted by a fool. We must realize this and start out for the good life with all haste. We must set out at this very moment. We have already wasted much of the day and have a long and arduous journey to make before nightfall. It is not that we have a short space of time, but that we waste much of it. Life is long enough, and it has been given in sufficiently generous measure to allow the accomplishment of the very greatest things if the whole of it is well invested. But when it is squandered in luxury and carelessness, when it is devoted to no good end, forced at last by the ultimata necessity, we perceive that it has passed away before we were aware that it was passing. So it is. The life we receive is not short, but we make it so, nor do we have any lack of it, but are wasteful of it. Just as great and princely wealth is scattered in a moment when it comes into the hands of a bad owner, while wealth, however limited, if it is entrusted to a good guardian, increases by use. So our life is amply long for him who orders it properly. We waste ourselves in so many ways and prioritize the wasting, sacrificing everything else for it. We are possessed by greed, lust, ambition, or nihilism. We chase after our own achievement, or spend ourselves supporting the achievement of others. We are made anxious by both success and failure. We do all of this without doing the most important things first. We must learn the fundamentals of life. We waste our lives because we are confused about what is actually valuable. We value money and land, which are worthless, but waste time, which is the only thing we own. Land and money come and go with the whim of fortune, but time can never be regained when lost or repaid when given. We are prone to so freely dispose of our time that even those who live 100 years will have wasted almost every day and every hour of it. Though all the brilliant intellects of the ages were to concentrate upon this one theme, never could they adequately express their wonder at this denser darkness of the human mind. Immersing yourself in the original texts of the Stoic philosophers is important if you want to change your life through philosophy. Understanding their teachings firsthand is the basis of this philosophical journey. After taking in their wisdom, the next step is to think about how these lessons relate to your own life and write about them. As Seneca says, we should study Stoicism like a bee, reading I hold as indispensable, primarily to keep me from being satisfied with myself alone. And besides, after I have learned what others have found out by their studies, to enable me to pass judgment on their discoveries and reflect upon discoveries that remain to be made. Reading nourishes the mind and refreshes it when it is wearied with study. Nevertheless, this refreshment is not obtained without study. We ought not to confine ourselves either to writing or to reading. The one continuous writing will cast a gloom over our strength and exhaust it. The other will make our strength flabby and watery. It is better to have recourse to them alternately and to blend one with the other, so that the fruits of one's reading may be reduced to concrete form by the pen. We also, I say, ought to copy these bees and sift whatever we have gathered from a varied course of reading, for such things are better preserved if they are kept separate. Then, by applying the supervising care with which our nature has endowed us, in other words, our natural gifts, we should so blend those several flavors into one delicious compound that, even though it betrays its origin, yet it nevertheless is clearly a different thing from that whence it came. This is what we see nature doing in our own bodies without any labor on our part. So it is with the food which nourishes our higher nature. We should see to it that whatever we have absorbed should not be allowed to remain unchanged, or it will be no part of us. We must digest it, otherwise it will merely enter the memory and not the reasoning power. It's not enough to just understand Stoicism's philosophy. We need to really incorporate it into the way we think. To do this, you need to do two things: read and write. First, feed your mind with the writings of the great Stoic thinkers. Then do reflective writing that combines their ideas with your own. a suggested reading order is to start with Seneca's Letters from a Stoic, then move on to others. In the next book, Seneca continues to warn us not to be too hard on ourselves. He says we should talk out loud and then try to live up to our bold words. We might not be able to do it right away, or even after a long time of trying, but that shouldn't stop us from going for the right goal. So you have no reason to misunderstand the honorable, brave, and honest language that people who are studying wisdom use. First, keep in mind that a student of wisdom is not the same thing as a man who has become perfect in wisdom. The student of wisdom will tell you, "In my speech, I express the most admirable sentiments, but I am still weltering amid countless ills right now. You shouldn't make me follow my rules to become a great model. I am shaping myself and working to become the best person I can be. If I ever finish everything I set out to do, you can expect that my words and actions match up." Part 8. How to turn to Stoicism. In his contemplation of life's challenges, the Roman emperor and Stoic philosopher Marcus Aurelius once remarked, "I have not arrived at perfect soundness of mind. Indeed, I never shall arrive at it." These words resonate deeply with individuals seeking solace and guidance in the tumult of existence. For many, the journey towards inner peace and fulfillment is a perpetual one, marked by self-discovery, introspection, and the quest for meaning. It is within the realm of philosophy, particularly Stoicism, that such seekers often find refuge and direction. Like Marcus Aurelius, countless individuals have found themselves grappling with the complexities of existence, searching for a philosophy that resonates with their innermost truths. For some, this quest begins in the confines of religious institutions, where doctrines offer solace and community. However, for others, like myself, the path to enlightenment takes a different trajectory. Raised within the confines of a nurturing Christian church, I once found comfort in the teachings of faith. Yet, as adolescence gave way to adulthood, I found myself questioning the tenets of religion and ultimately relinquishing my belief in a higher power. The transition from devout believer to skeptical agnostic was fraught with tumult and uncertainty, leaving me adrift in a sea of existential angst. In the absence of religious conviction, I struggled to find my place in the world, longing for a sense of belonging and community that had once been provided by the church. I sought solace in secular groups and social circles, but none offered the profound connection and camaraderie I craved. It was during this period of existential disillusionment that I stumbled upon Stoicism, a philosophy that would fundamentally alter the course of my life. Stoicism, with its emphasis on self-mastery, resilience, and the pursuit of virtue, spoke to the depths of my soul in ways that traditional religious dogma could not. Rooted in ancient Greco-Roman philosophy, Stoicism offers a pragmatic approach to life's challenges, advocating for the cultivation of inner tranquility and moral excellence amidst the vicissitudes of fate. The words of Marcus Aurelius, penned centuries ago, echoed in my mind as I delved deeper into the teachings of Stoicism. "I compound preventatives rather than remedies for my gout," he wrote, "and I am satisfied if it comes at a rarer interval and does not shoot as painfully as your feet, which are lame." In these words, I found resonance with my own struggles and aspirations, a recognition that true wisdom lies not in the eradication of suffering, but in the cultivation of resilience and equanimity in its midst. Embracing Stoicism was not merely an intellectual exercise, but a profound transformation of my worldview and approach to life. The Stoic virtues of wisdom, courage, justice, and temperance became guiding principles by which I sought to navigate the complexities of existence. Through the practice of mindfulness, rational reflection, and ethical action, I endeavored to forge a path towards inner peace and moral clarity.
Central to Stoic philosophy is the concept of eudaimonia, a state of flourishing and fulfillment attained through the cultivation of virtue and the pursuit of excellence. Unlike fleeting pleasures or external accolades, eudaimonia is an enduring state of well-being that arises from living in harmony with one's inner nature and the rational order of the universe.
For me, Stoicism provided not only a philosophical framework for understanding the world, but also a sense of community and belonging that had eluded me in secular circles. Through online forums, local meetups, and philosophical discussions, I found kindred spirits who shared my passion for self-improvement and ethical living. Together, we embarked on a journey of mutual support, intellectual exploration, and moral growth. The teachings of Stoicism offered practical wisdom for navigating life's challenges with grace and resilience. From the Stoic practice of premeditatio malorum, the contemplation of future hardships, to the cultivation of gratitude and acceptance, I found solace in the timeless insights of ancient sages. Stoicism taught me to embrace adversity as an opportunity for growth, to cultivate inner tranquility amidst external chaos, and to live with integrity and purpose in a world fraught with uncertainty. As I reflect on my journey towards Stoicism, I am reminded of the words of Seneca, another towering figure of ancient Stoicism: "Luck is what happens when preparation meets opportunity." In embracing Stoicism, I found not only a philosophy of life, but also a roadmap for personal transformation and moral excellence. Through the practice of Stoic virtues and principles, I have discovered a profound sense of meaning, purpose, and belonging that transcends the transient vicissitudes of existence. Stoic practice: get into the beat or walk the tightrope. When things happen that throw you off, go back to yourself right away and try not to lose the rhythm more than you have to. If you keep going back to the rhythm, you'll understand it better. When done correctly by an experienced Stoic, the hours between getting up and going to bed should all feel the same. It's good to train your mind by setting goals in the morning and thinking about them at night. Between those two points, we should spend our time practicing virtue and avoiding the traps and temptations of wealth. That's what Marcus Aurelius called this state, the beat. When things are going well for me, it does feel like that. But most of the time, being calm is more like walking on a wire with a tightrope. First, you have to get to a high place. Then you have to stay balanced all day while luck keeps coming at you from all sides. Sometimes you'll lose your balance and fall, but you have to get back up, climb again, and get back out on the rope. The goal is to not fall at any point between your planning in the morning and your review in the evening. It looks like it will take a while, so how are we going to do this? I get on the tightrope, get up early, relax, read or listen to a little Stoicism, write or be creative. Your process may be different. Always keep this in mind. I could die today. Remember it first thing in the morning and lots of times during the day. Not even the next hour is certain. Stoicism is the only thing I can do right now. On my shoulder, Seneca is watching everything I do and think, and he wants me to succeed. How I connect with people around me and with the rest of the world, make sure I'm in the right relationship with anyone that comes to mind, especially people I'm mad at. As I go about my day, stay on the tightrope, think about what virtue is and how I can show it. In what way can I worship her today? Out of superstition, being aware of the present moment, I try to keep an eye on my thoughts all the time and fight any hurtful or illogical ones as soon as they come up. The choice of control: only set goals for myself, don't care about things that are out of my control. I don't always have as much control as I think I do. The good things that have happened to me and how grateful I am. How can I help other people who deserve it? If you're having bad thoughts about the past or the present, try thinking of other good things. Remember that you can't change the past or the future. Make sure that's where all of my attention is going. Once, remember what is really good. The mind wants what it already has. Fears. Think about what is really bad. A mind that lets its fears take over. Do something about the things you can control. When you feel stressed, practice not caring about the other people. Take 10 to 15 minutes during lunch to write in a silent book. In the nights, work out, write, be artistic, or get things done. Make easy, good food. Write down what went well and what didn't today. What else could I have done? What bad habit did you break today? What sin have you looked at? How are you better than them? Write down the good things that have happened to me and why I'm thankful for them. Think about how I can get them back next time. What was the smartest idea I got today? What is Seneca's daily sum and share for himself? Get yourself something that will protect you from misfortunes like poverty, death, and more. And once you've gone over a lot of ideas, pick one to really think about that day. It is hard to put into practice the idea that living in the present is the best way to approach life, even if you mentally understand that it is. Seneca said, "The present alone can make no man wretched." I believe that this is true. For some reason, we all want to live in the past or the future, but putting the present moment first is the best way to show the dichotomy of control. Although this truth is hard to understand, I think we become truly wise in the Stoic sage sense the moment we see it in a way that we can't miss. It seems like this is a real discovery that people can have. It means that we are using our thinking in the best way possible, and the end result should be the happiest state a person can reach. The last part is just a guess, but being able to feel this way seems like it's true. To find out, you have to keep working and try to make the most of every hour. We should be able to make will put us far ahead of the average person. Stoicism is not something you learn overnight. It takes a sustained effort, making real changes to your thoughts and actions over a long period of time. The different levels of Stoicism. Stoicism has some very high goals for its followers, but it is also realistic about where we start and how little progress we can expect to make. It's a long road, and the highest ranks are only for people who are naturally good at it, or who started training hard when they were young. But for the rest of us, the progress we can make is more than we can imagine at first.